Well, Alrighty Gang, welcome back to the Act of Self-Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Williver, and with any luck at all, I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today is a new friend of mine. His name is Dan Beam. Dan is from the Chicagoland area, and he is in financial services. So, Dan, first of all, how are you, sir?
I am doing pretty well, Mike. It's great to be on here. Never done a podcast before, but I'm really happy to be here.
I've done a couple, so I'll get us through this one way or another. Not to worry. You briefly tried to describe for me what you do in financial services. Can you kind of explain for the nice people listening and watching what that means exactly?
Yeah, so I'm a compliance manager, and there are a lot of rules and regulations in the financial services industry. There's the proactive side of my job, which is trying to ensure that my company does things compliantly in accordance with all of these rules and regulations. And then there's the reactive side of my job, where if somebody does something wrong and we get sued, then I deal with that as well. So litigation and regulatory compliance, and I work from home, so...
I think you meant to say if someone in your company is accused of wrongdoing and is sued.
Exactly. I think that's what I said.
Because if I come to work at your company and you just assume my guilt, I don't know if I want to work there. You know what I mean? I mean, it's going to make me nervous. All right, moving on. So you just kind of recently found the Act of Self-Protection channel, and it was subsequent to the incident we're going to talk about, which is kind of cool because a lot of times, people will say, I listened to your channel for years and I learned something there, but you came across ASP after your attack. Isn't that right?
Yeah. It was probably just only about a month ago or something like that. YouTube somehow popped up in the algorithm, and it showed me a video, and that's all it took was, about 2 minutes, and I was hooked, and I can't even count how many videos I've seen, listen to a few podcasts as well. So I'm probably just getting the tip of the iceberg compared to you guys have been around for a long time doing this.
Well, I've only been here for about 2.5 years, but John and the rest of the team are doing it for almost a decade or over a decade now, actually, since 2011. So let me ask you, how did you, I always wonder, how did you decide to write in? Did you hear me solicit people to come reach out to me with their stories, or how did you decide to write in? How did you find out that was a thing you could do?
I think I purposely ended up looking and trying to get a contact, and then I ended up on the website and I saw where you could make submissions. But it was after there was a more recent, I don't know, it was 2 weeks ago, there was a video of a woman using a knife in a self-defense situation. And I think John was saying it might be the first time where he's got video of somebody using a knife in one of those situations. And it really kind of compelled me, given the situation I'd gone through last summer, compelled me to reach out. And I was hoping to get videos, but, as I've previously described, that may not be happening.
Yeah. So, for those who aren't on our email string between me and Dan, because it's just me and Dan, for those of you who don't know, he is at least in the process, right, of trying to get a FOIA request in to get those videos, but no luck so far. I trust that if you ever come across them or you're able to get them, pry them from the hands of the transit authority or the Chicago PD or whoever, that you'll send them to us. Yeah.
I absolutely will be. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Yeah, there are some pictures. I don't know if I'll be able to find a way to get the photos, as long as it's okay with you, somehow onto the podcast page. But the photos of your injuries are pretty horrendous looking. It was a rough day that Dan had. Yeah. So why don't you tell us, prior to getting into the story of the incident, were you always, or not always, but as an adult, have you been generally a self-defense minded person? Is that something, a hobby of yours or an interest of yours or something that you pay attention to?
It's an interest, and it's something that just happened. Like, in all honesty, I was a fat kid growing up, and at some point in time in middle school, I decided to, start dealing with my bullies directly. So, there were lots of little minor fights along the way. I went to military school for 3 years where hazing of underclassmen, and that was 7th, 8th, and freshman year, and it goes up to a senior in high school. So, there were scraps and fights along the way, but then I've just always otherwise, been a defensive-minded person, aware of my surroundings. It's not the first serious incident that I've had in my life either, but this was by far the most serious, so...
Yeah, if you get into one more serious than this, we're gonna, I may not, there may be a problem, because you looked, they listen, they beat this poor man like a rented mule, and he fought back and prevailed in the end. Prevailed, you know, prevailed being in quotation marks, I guess. But you know, he's here talking to us, so that's the upshot of that, is that he's here talking to us now, which wasn't a sure thing. So let's briefly talk about the previous incident. You've had problems before with violent crime or people attempting to rob you, or what was it that led you to just sort of interest?
Yeah, so the first time I got stabbed, I was 16, and I was stabbed by a full grown racist man who accosted friends, me and two other friends. They just yelled by, they drove by in a car, yelled the N word out the window. We yelled something back, and then came back around. We got in a fight. This man had a knife. I got stabbed. That's when I was 16 years old, the first time I got stabbed. And I think that's probably one of the things that led me just to being more consciously, you know, aware of these situations and the things that could happen. And that I don't ever want to be looking for fights, but you need to be ready for it when it does happen.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. I too was a fat kid, and now I'm a fat man. Yeah.
Then,
and sorry, I was just going to say,
yeah,
I never got stabbed, but I can definitely identify with that, you know, with just not liking bullies and not wanting to be bullied or allow them to get away with what they think they're going to get away with. So after the stabbing, was there another incident that happened that involving you aside from the one we're here to talk about?
About 5 years ago, I guess this was now, I was leaving a currency exchange. I live in the city and I'm a city boy. I don't, 2 years after I moved to the city, so 20 years ago, I quit driving. I don't want a car in the city. I take public transportation, or in this day and age of ride share, like it's so easy. I just don't want the problems. They have red light cameras, speed cameras, cars getting broken into, cars getting stolen. And that's on top of all your regular, you know, gas, insurance, maintenance, and all that right. stuff. So I don't have a car. I take public transit, and I was managing a bar at the time, and I did spend a couple of years working in a bar, and I started at the door of that place. So that's a few more incidents of self-defense along the way. But and I was going to cash a check. The bar owner wrote me a small like reimbursement check or something, and I stopped at a currency exchange right off of an L stop in a not very lovely part of the city. And I go in there, I cash the check, I put the money in my pocket, and as I'm walking out, like I see across the street the bus I'm trying to catch. I see that I'm just missing this bus right across the street as I'm walking across the street to go get it. So I'm like, oh damn. So I'm crossing the street, and then I notice there's a guy who starts following me, and I get to the bus stop and stand there, and he gets in the uncomfortable zone. He's closer to me than I would get to a stranger. And he asked me, hey, do you know when the bus is coming? And immediately now this is another red flag, because if you rely on public transportation in the city and you were walking up to that bus stop with me, you also would have seen that the bus literally just pulled away and we just missed it.
Yeah, so we call that an opening line.
I'm sure this guy is set. Yeah,
yes.
He's sizing me up.
Something like, hey, do you have a light? Hey, do you have a cigarette? Hey, do you know what time it is? Or can you give me directions to whatever?
Yeah.
It really is. It gives them a moment to size you up and kind of get a feel for, is this someone who's a potential victim or not? So just be aware of that too. That's your first tip for the day. So what happened then?
Yeah. And I said, you know, the bus, I just saw it just pull away. So it's probably going to be about 10 minutes. And, you know, within a second after that, he simulates a gun in his jacket pocket. It's raining outside. I'm holding an umbrella in one hand. I've got a bag over the shoulder here, too. And my left hand's free, but he simulates gun in pocket. And he says, now, before you do anything else, I got a big fucking gun in this pocket. Now, give me that shit. And he pointed to the pocket where I put the money in. So now I'm like, great. He was, you know, watching me from outside the currency exchange. And I hesitated longer than I think I should have, but, and I don't know why. It's probably not a good decision, but he had both of his hands in his pockets and he wasn't ready to get punched in the face. And he did not have a gun. I don't know. In hindsight, I tell myself he seemed more nervous than me coming up with the opening line. I'm like, if this guy had a gun, he would have walked up to me and, you know, gotten right to business. But this guy seemed nervous. He wasn't ready to do what he was doing. I don't know all of those things. It just was a decision within 2 seconds, but I just started punching him. And he fell backwards and, you know, onto the ground. He was like, oh, I was just kidding, man. I was just kidding. And he gets up and he runs away. He just ended up getting arrested.
Just kidding. JK, LOL, yeah. JK. I wasn't really.
Yeah.
So at some point, did you?
He ran away. The police.
Okay. So folks who are listening, the delay is a little bit of a delay. So there's going to be some of us interrupting each other, and I apologize in advance, but it is what it is on the internet. Did you happen to notice that the barrel tip of his gun was about the size of an adult human index finger? Did that help you just make your decision or no?
Yeah. It did look that way. And like I said, he literally, his words were, I have a big, you know, fucking gun in this pocket. And like, I'm, you know, looking and I'm like, that's, I don't know. It doesn't look that big.
Yeah. Dirty Harry. Yeah. You are not, sir. Not with that, whatever that is.
Yeah. Exactly. So coincidentally, that gentleman is now in jail on an attempted murder charge for shooting somebody on the red line. This was, like I said, that incident with that guy happened to me 5 years ago. He got a light IDOC sentence for, you know, that attempted robbery. I don't know, maybe he was in for a year or something, and he got back out. And just like 2 years ago, he shot somebody on the train trying to rob them.
Yeah, so basically,
apparently he after the incident with me.
Yeah, you knocked him on the ground, and he's like, maybe I should get an actual gun next time, because this isn't working. This is right. Not working out.
The little finger thing isn't working.
Right.
Yeah. But, and that person on the train, coincidentally and ironically, they defended themselves. They had a knife, and they cut him across the face with the knife, and he ended up getting found in a gangway like a block away after he ran off the train, bleeding from the face, and he got arrested, and now he's got an attempted murder charge. Apparently he shot the defender there twice in the shoulder on the train, but
well, I'm learning something new about Chicago, which is there's a lot of would-be victims that are a little prickly. You're not, maybe you don't want to commit crime in Chicago. You know what I mean?
That's good. You're not supposed to, not allowed to, carry weapons on the CTA, on the, transit property. So, I think, a lot of people will carry an edge, though.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you saw, but I mean, I hate to say this, but you kind of need a little bit of protection from the cops that are writing tickets for people for moving through cars. You see the video we did recently about Chicago Transit Police shooting an unarmed guy, like legitimately shooting a guy because he was fist fighting with him?
Yep.
That's insane.
Yeah. I absolutely, it's crazy. Yeah. So those CTA workers aren't supposed to carry weapons either. I obviously understand why they might want to, but yeah, that's really something.
Well, I just love the mentality that says, hey, there's a big wave of violent crime. What should we do to prevent crime? Disarm all the potential victims. That's the first thing we're going to do. I never understood that. I never understood that line of reasoning at all. You know, I carry a gun everywhere I go and no one ever knows I have it.
Know that.
Say that again.
Yep. It's certainly not going to stop the criminals. We already know that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as you can attest to personally. So let's kind of transition from that into your most recent story. How long ago did this happen to you, and where were you, and what happened?
July 22nd of 2022. So just a year and a half ago, I was living in Chicago, kind of by White Sox Park in Bridgeport, near the south side. And I was visiting a friend up north earlier in the day. And the red line is the way to get from you know, all the way up north to pretty far down south. So I was taking the red line home late at night.
And about what time did this whole thing kick off? And to describe the scene for us, you're on a train car when this happened. How busy is the train car? Yep. Are there a ton of other people there? Is it just you? Is it like a scene at a Death Wish and you're Charles Bronson, or what? How did it go down exactly?
Yeah. So it was about 2:30 in the morning. So it's fairly empty. You got, you know, one or two homeless people per car, and you know, maybe one or two actual passengers per car. But, you know, you're getting close to bar closing time. So as you're running through some of the busier neighborhoods, you might get a group of people. And that's exactly what happened here. I was, you know, sitting on my train car, and, you know, there was like, two or three other people in my train car. And we pull up through a busy neighborhood, and I see a group of 10 to 15, you know, maybe a dozen or so, whatever, just people on the platform. They're kind of in a big group. I assume they're together, and I'm hoping that the train moves past them and they get onto a different train car instead of my train car, because I just don't want a group of loud, obnoxious, drunk people or whatever. You know, I'm in a nice, quiet train car with no drama at 2:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and I'd prefer it to stay that way. But it didn't. They got on, most of them ended up getting on the train car behind me, and a few in this group, you know, like, cause the train stopped right in between the groups. So, you know, a bunch of them get into one car, and three or four of them get into my car and walk through, my train car to meet up with the rest of the group of people in the second train car. So they're all pretty much now this group of a dozen people, they're in the train car behind me, and got on at this stop. And, you know, I was aware, I saw them on the platform, and I realized it's a big group of mostly younger people and whatever. I hope it's not going to be a problem, you know?
Yeah, but I know the feeling. I used to ride the Metro in DC, similar kind of, a lot smaller than Chicago, obviously, but a similar kind of vibe. And you just know the feeling when a bunch of, especially intoxicated or high, younger people, you know, young men between the ages of like 18 and 25 are all full of, you know, their hormones are still exploding and they're just full of energy and they just looking for trouble. Everyone knows that feeling. And you're like, crap,
yeah.
Please don't notice me. Please don't notice me. Please don't interact with me. Don't come over here. And that's all you can really do until they actually do come over to you.
That is exactly it. So as it continues, the train pulls away from the station and we make it to the next, stop. Without incident. This is all above ground at this point in time. We make it to the next above ground stop without incident. And then this next gap between stops, it's one of the longest ones on any of the train systems. It's a good 4 minute, you know, ride because it transfers from above ground to underground. And it's just a little bit of a space between
just enough time for an armed robbery.
A lot of them are just a minute or two apart, but this one is, you know, went over about 4 minutes or something mm-hmm. like that. And as we pull away from this, this second stop, I have my phone in my hand. I'm just kind of sitting there with my elbows on my knees and my phone in my hand and still aware. And I hear the door open from that train car to my train car. And I look over and there's two people walking my way. The second one's wearing a black balaclava. And that's not 100%, a sign that something bad's about to happen. They sell weed on the train and they smoke on the train. So some of these guys are just hiding their faces all the time anyways. But you know, the second guy's got on the black ski mask and these two guys are walking towards me. And I just, you know, I obviously had stopped. I heard the door open. I wasn't looking at my phone anymore, but I'm still holding it in my left hand and I'm watching them approach. The first guy, as he walks by, turns and he eyeballs my belongings. He looks at my phone and I got a little bag over my shoulder. He eyeballs my belongings. And the second guy just reaches out and grabs at my phone and tries to take my phone out of my hands.
Yeah, I think the fact that you had stopped paying so much attention to your phone is a huge part of the story. You know, the fact that you were aware, had you been engrossed in your phone, I bet you, and I bet you'll agree with this, this whole thing could have gone very differently. Would you say that that's an accurate statement?
Yeah, that's definitely accurate. And I wish instead of just stopping looking at my phone, I had 2 seconds there. I wish I would have put my phone in my pocket. So my hands were ready to do what my hands needed to do. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't think about that at the time, but like I said, I was just looking dead at them as they walked up to me. And, the second guy just goes right for my phone. I start struggling with him, not giving up the phone. And there's no, in this situation, I know people are like, oh, did you wish you just gave him the phone? It's easy to come up with this decision-making scenario when you're just sitting in a room talking with somebody about it. But at no point in time was there a debate in my mind, should I do this? Should I do that? Like, instincts kicked in. Mm-hmm. Somebody's trying to take something that belongs to me. And, you know, I'm just not going to let them take it. Like, we'll see where this goes. But a strong arm robbery right here isn't, you know, I'm just not going to give my phone up. I start struggling with him. His buddy sees that he can't get the phone out of my hands. So now it's 2-on-1. One of them, you know, grabs me around the throat and starts, you know, pushing me back against the train window. And I kind of use that force to stand up on the train car chair and, you know, jump down at him. And I'm trying to engage the two of them while holding the phone in my left hand. I know I've got my knife in my right pocket. It's just a 2-inch CRKT minimalist. It's in a hard Kydex sheath, so you reach in there, and it has, like, finger choils, so you could feel when you reach in the pocket whether you're holding it the way you want to. Mm-hmm. And the sheath is such that just, you know, when you grab it with one hand, you could pop off the Kydex sheath with your thumb, either inside your pocket or as you're pulling the knife out in your area. I know it's in my pocket, but like I said, I'm holding my phone in my left hand and I'm struggling with two guys and I just can't take my one free hand and reach into my pocket to grab my knife at that point in time, even though I realize that this situation is pretty serious now. And these guys are young and in good shape. And I realized that I had to try to get to my knife. One of them knocks me down and the phone falls out of my hand. And I'm getting back up and go to pick up the phone. And then I just ate a boot right to the middle of the face, kind of rung my bell. And I was like, well, that's it. And phone goes into the left pocket, hand goes into the right pocket and pulls out the knife, pop the sheath off. And I stabbed the guy who was closest to me. I had to lunge forward to do it. It kind of paused for a minute. I think he saw the knife. He turned around. I ended up, whatever, my knife strike hit him in the back. Then there was kind of like a break. They took off and ran back into their car and I immediately fled in the opposite direction into the next train car. I called 911. I took my phone back out and I called 911 and was explaining the robbery at 10. I pressed the emergency call button to call the train conductor to let him know that there was a robbery in progress on the train, so that he would stop at the next stop and wait for the police.
It's his third one of the night, probably.
And yeah, exactly. And I was keeping an eye, looking down the center of the aisle into the next train car to see if and when these people were going to regroup and try to track me down and come after me. And indeed, I looked again and saw just one person coming through there, through that way. And so I immediately went over to the door between the train cars, who was holding it shut with my foot to stop him from coming in. He wasn't acting agitated or angry. He wasn't signaling to me, he just kind of stood there with his head down, like he was waiting for me to open the door or something. And I know now it's been almost four minutes since this incident started. We're going to be pulling up to the train platform anyways. And holding this door here shut is going to be futile once the main side doors of the train open at the platform and people could come in anyways.
Right.
So I decide to let go of the door and let him come through. And right after I let go of the door and started walking away, he just almost immediately attacks me, just charges at me, bull rushes me. I'm on the phone with 911. So here I am again in another fight with a phone in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have a knife in my right hand and I struggle with him for a minute. I get the upper hand. I'm kind of on top of him on the ground, but he's still kind of struggling. He's not laying on his back, but like a knee situation, trying to get up, but he's still struggling with me, trying to grab at me. First one or two knife swings hit him in the side of the head, somewhere by the ear. From what I learned afterwards. But and I remember pausing for a moment after I stabbed him in the head, thinking, like, does this guy realize, like, you know, I'm on top of him, you know, with a knife and I just hit him in the head with it. And like, I could end him right now. You know, like this went through my head. I literally paused and I saw a video too. And I remember thinking that. And then I quickly realized, no, he doesn't care. Like he's still trying to get me, you know what I'm saying? And I hit him plumb in the side of the neck with the knife. And that one stopped him for a bit. He immediately grabs his neck and
regretted his life choices.
Reaches into his pocket. Yeah, but only more momentarily. This guy, he stayed in the fight. He subsequently, he pulled a nice gas station knife out of his pocket, 3.5-inch folder, flicked it open, and he's like, "You stabbed me, motherfucker. I'm going to kill you." He said this to me. So he's holding whatever, his neck with his one hand and his knife with the other hand. And but now the train had stopped. And we get to, you know, this next train stop. It's a subway tunnel. And now I'm in like the second train car from the front. The exit to get up to street level is way, way in the back. And obviously this whole group of people I know is in between me and the exit. And that's just aside from the fact that I'm, you know, I'm not in running shape. I'm 6'2", 260 pounds. Like I've got some broad shoulders, but yeah, I'm not in shape. Escape. I just kind of hope maybe they're just gonna leave and try to get away since they must know that the police are coming. But the guy that I stabbed got off the train car and I stepped out to, like, you know, look to see, am I going to be able to get away here? And I just see multiple people coming down the platform towards me.
What
at that
nightmare.
Point in time, a couple of them, yeah, a couple of them holding liquor bottles, you know, clearly ready to use them as weapons. And I ducked back into a train car and a guy followed me through the train car and I ran across that car and jumped, you know, came out the front of it, out onto the platform again. And then I ended up getting hit dead square, like in the center of the forehead with a liquor bottle that shattered on impact.
If you don't mind me interrupting, really may I guess the capacity of these bottles in ounces? Was it 40?
No.
Okay.
They were
hard liquor bottles. Oh, okay. I got you.
Like a vodka bottle or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a pretty solid guess though.
I've done.
But, no. So a better handle, a better handle on the long neck liquor bottle than on the 40-ounce bottle that kind of has that.
For those at home listening or watching, listen, I know you've seen movies where people break bottles over people's heads and simulated bar fights. Those are breakaway bottles. They're meant to break on impact. Next time you have time, let's say you're at the dump and you see yourself just a beer bottle. I mean, a beer bottle or a bottle of wine or whatever. Just tap that on the concrete a few times to see how hard it is to actually break. Those things are stout and you can kill somebody with that. Even if you don't break it, you can still kill somebody. You can bludgeon someone to death with a liquor bottle. So it's no joke. It's a deadly threat.
Yep. You are absolutely right. And I was kind of surprised when the bottle actually did shatter on my head. And needless to say, I was dazed. Immediately, the amount of blood was just tremendous. You've seen the picture of the wound on my forehead. It's like a big Y-shaped gash, like that was extremely deep and just wide open. And there's blood, you know, going in your eyes and down your face and in your mouth and lots of stuff going on there. But I was dazed for a minute. Within 10 seconds of that happening, the guy that I had to stab in the neck, he then got a chance to take some swipes at me with his knife. He stabbed me near the clavicle on the left side. And he took another swing with his knife and I got a defensive wound on my left hand from putting that out there to stop a second knife swing. And then I figured out that just the train platform out in the open with, there's six people chasing me around and engaging me right now. The person, who I initially stabbed in the back, he was out of the fight, but there were still six other people engaging me in the wide open on this platform. The train conductor at this point is standing there watching. He later went to the hospital for stress. Anyways, I ran back into one of the train cars And I figured every single train car has a place where the conductor can drive that car. Mm-hmm. But if it's not being used, you know, they're only using the one on the front car. There's this smaller space towards the front of each car when you go through. Like three people could fit in there, and there's a doorway to go in there. And I'm like, I'm going to go run, corner myself in the end of one of these train cars. At least then they have to funnel through a doorway to get to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't be surrounded by people then. So I run into a train car. And of course, they're following me, and I'm protecting the doorway. And I can tell you that nobody wants to get stabbed once they see somebody using a knife, willing to use a knife. And the biggest value at the end of the day that I found in the knife was its ability to create space here. One guy got stabbed in the arms, but still nobody wants to get close enough to get stabbed, even though six people should just be able to overpower and pummel one person with a 2-inch knife.
Right. But one of those people is going to get stuck, and they all know that. And nobody wants to be that guy, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So the knife helped me create some space there. And then I figured out, well, they're still trying to get at me. They still got, you know, bludgeons, bottles in their hands. So I'm like, if I open this door behind me to cross into the other train car, but I don't go into that car, I could be in this small space between the two train cars, holding the door shut. It's not accessible. Like, you can't quite reach somebody in that space from the platform, and nobody would be able to get to me if I was in that space. And luckily nobody's got guns at this point, so that I've seen where they could just shoot me. So that's my plan now. But I kind of got to turn around for a moment to open this door up. That's when I got hit with another bottle in the back of the head, and you saw some staples in the back of the head for that one.
Mm-hmm.
So another bottle strike or two to the head there, back of the head. And I got in this little space between the train cars, and they're trying to pull the doors open, and there's guys standing right on the platform who just can't quite, you know, reach me from there. But they're still trying to get to me, and they're still not stopping, and I'm like, well, I could jump off the train, which is now stopped at the station, of course. I could climb over. They've got these little, you know, ropes kind of that help you in that little walkway between the two train cars. I'm like, I could climb over these ropes and jump off the train on the far side over the third rail. And then essentially they're all either on the train or on the platform, you know, with the train between me and them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I jumped off the train over the third rail, and then I ran down the subway tunnel, not just where the platform was, but down into the actual subway tunnel. And I positioned myself in between the two train tracks in this little doorway. There's a third rail to either side of me, and I was hiding in this little doorway. And if somebody came running along the little path that I took, I was just going to pop out and push them on that electric rail. But
explain to the nice folks at home, the suburban people and our South Dakota listeners who don't know what a third rail is. What does that mean? I know what it means, but maybe they don't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That is the rail that provides electricity to the train. So the train rides on the two metal rails, but then there's a third rail right next to any set of train tracks that provides the electricity to these trains. It's extremely high voltage, and if you step on it or fall on it, you're toast.
Yeah, it probably is one of those signs with a stick figure guy who looks like he's falling, and there's like a lightning bolt next to it, and it says danger and peligro and... third rail is now a euphemism for things you don't want to go near. That's how bad the third rail is. So the third rail of politics being, you know, some controversial issue. Third rail is bad. Avoid it. They had a third rail in the metro, and every once in a while you'd hear a story of somebody getting down there for whatever reason or falling and ending up hitting it, and it will absolutely kill you dead with electricity.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, there was this doorway cut out between the north and southbound tracks, and the third rail for each track is on the inside there. So I just stood in this cutout doorway and was ready to pop out and use that third rail as my weapon at that point. I was exhausted. I was bleeding so much at this point in time. I was starting to experience a little bit of shock. I was breathing too heavily. I sat there and kind of made myself calm down. I sat down on the ground, called 911 again, and just started practicing some mindful breathing to slow down my breathing and my heart rate and maybe not gush as much blood as quickly. And I was okay. Started getting a little lightheaded finally by the time the police showed up. But I told them, I'm like, look, I'm hiding in this tunnel. There's all kinds of people on the platform. I don't know who's part of that group. If somebody's still waiting for me, I'm not coming out from where I'm at until I see police officers with guns at the very front of the train platform. You know what I'm saying?
So good call.
Make sure you send them down this way because I'm in this tunnel, you know, bleeding pretty heavily.
So and, could you?
Yeah, it took a while.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I was going to ask, could you just give a quick list of your injuries, what, where you were injured and what exactly was broken and all that sort of thing. So people have an idea. Cause the pictures really probably don't even do it justice. If I'm guessing, cause
yeah,
so anytime you get lacerated above the brow line of the head, that skin is very tight and lots of blood comes out. So what were all your injuries?
So there was a massive laceration there on the forehead. And I explained to people listening, it's kind of like a Y shape, in the vertical part that goes up and down, goes down onto the bridge of my nose. So, I mean, this starts in the middle of my forehead and goes down to the top of the bridge of my nose. That was a massive laceration from a bottle strike and I had 15 stitches or something they put in that to close it up. I had the stab wound near the clavicle. That was closed up with, you know, whatever, 6-8 stitches or something like that. I had a big laceration on the back of the head from a bottle strike that was closed with like 10 staples. I had fractures to the orbital bone, sinuses, nose, and forehead. So facial fractures just all over the front of my face. Mm. I had bruises and other cuts. I had the defensive knife wound on my left hand and then just bruises and scrapes. And lots of bruises and smaller abrasions and scrapes.
In the law enforcement business, we would describe you as having been AFU, and people can figure out what that stands for, but you were AFU at the moment. So how long does it take for them to clear the area and get paramedics to you to give you some medical assistance? And are there any other quote unquote victims about anyone else who got the prickly end of your defensive posture?
Yeah. So this is, that's kind of, so I finally see the police officers arriving to the front of the platform and I start walking down towards them on this little path between the wall and the third rail. I'm a little wobbly and stuff, and sure, I want to make sure I myself don't fall onto the third rail at this point in time. I've lost a lot of blood. I'm starting to get a little lightheaded, and I was about to step over it, and they're like, wait, no, we need to have them shut it off. So here I am. The police are now right across from me, but I'm on the other side of the third rail, and they don't want me to walk over it until they get the power cut, and that takes 2 or 3 minutes of me just standing there looking at the police, waiting for the CTA
standing there
to
pull bleeding
power to the electrified rail. Then finally, they're like, okay, come on over. And I step over it and I walk over to them. And the train platform, if you're down on the tracks, it's about whatever, chest height or something like that. So I hoist one leg up over there and kind of roll up on there and onto the platform. And they're like, can you walk upstairs or do we need to get somebody down here? And I'm like, I'll walk up there. I'm like, just have somebody stand by me. You know, I don't think I'm that lightheaded yet, but at some point, you know, loss of blood, mm-hmm, which I experienced from getting stabbed once, you're going to get to the point of passing out. I walk, you know, it's up 150 yards down the train platform and then up like three flights of stairs. And they're like, you got to sit here and wait. We need to wait for an ambulance. And I'm like, what about that one right there? And we're going, no, somebody else got stabbed and they're in that one. So,
uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. One of the guys that, I don't know if it was one of the guys who started the robbery or the guy stabbed in the neck, but they got the first ambulance cause they went upstairs first. But, what I later ended up finding out from the police was that, after I thwarted the initial robbery attempt and I said I retreated into another train car and I called 911 and I pressed the train operator button, the detectives told me that they immediately tapped into city cam. Then they started watching it happen live. So then there are police dispatchers who are getting descriptions of the attackers from the videos.
Oh, wow.
And relaying it, you know, to the police who are being dispatched to the scene. So the police who were arriving on scene already had, you know, descriptions of the attackers and what they were looking for. And those guys stayed in the subway so long, just trying to get me, even after I had thwarted the initial robbery attempt, that by the time they ran upstairs, the police were just getting on site, and they arrested six of them, and three of them I had stabbed. Yeah, they got them all, except for one of the guys, one of the initial robbery, one of the guys who initiated the robbery, they did not catch. He got away. I think he was smart and just took off after I, you know, thwarted the initial robbery attempt, and he didn't participate in the trying to get me afterwards.
And nobody snitched? Nobody snitched on this guy?
Nah, apparently not. No.
All right. So before we talk about lessons, I do want to discuss sort of the aftermath. First about the legal, if you don't mind talking about it, I know there is some discomfort in some of that stuff for you. So I don't want to talk about anything that's going to get you, give you any kind of trouble whatsoever. No. So why don't you just describe for us the legal process in your own words?
Yeah, for sure. There were no problems for me whatsoever. Illinois law specifically allows you to use force to protect yourself or another person from somebody else's imminent unlawful use of force, including the use of deadly force to prevent imminent death, great bodily harm, or the commission of a forcible felony. Mm-hmm. So I knew I didn't have any problems defending myself. They were committing a forcible felony when they tried to rob me, when that guy later tried to attack me after I retreated. These were forcible felonies, so I wasn't worried about myself. Six of them, like I said, were arrested. They released one of those six because from the video, it didn't appear that he ever hit me and didn't try to take anything from me. He was part of the group chasing me around, but he was on the fringe the whole time, and they elected not to charge him. But five of them were charged with aggravated robbery and aggravated assault of a transit passenger, which enhances the felony, the fact that it was a transit passenger or employee that they assaulted. So these are they're both, I think, Class X felonies, which is the most serious felony in Illinois, 6 to 30 years. And these five people all got charged with that. I figured a couple of them, it would end up sticking, but a few of them, whatever, weren't as serious. You know, the guys who hit me with bottles and the guy who stabbed me, you know, is more serious. But they had some problems during the trial, particularly the robbery charges against the people who participated in the subsequent attack. Those charges were dropped against them because they couldn't tie the groups together. And the guy who stabbed me, his attorney successfully argued that he did it in self-defense, that he claimed he was riding the train alone. He didn't know anything about an attempted robbery. He just heard that some crazy guy was stabbing people, so he went off to go find this person and stop them from stabbing other people. And that's the only reason that he attacked me, and then I stabbed him, so he stabbed me in self-defense.
So what you're saying, Dan, what you're telling me is you stabbed the hero of the Chicago transit system for no reason. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. The protector of the transit children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I
have friends who were attorneys, there, and I don't have anything personally against attorneys, but some of the stuff, man, that defense attorneys come up with is... It's like, I feel like the guy in Anchorman, like, you eat an entire wheel of cheese? I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. Like, you came up with this story that your guy's a hero who was trying to stop the guy who was getting attempted murdered, you know, and robbed. I mean, they do it with a straight face is the impressive part. They stand there with their suit on and they just say these words. And you're like, that's the most outlandish thing I've ever heard in my life. Problem is, a jury or a judge agreed with him enough to have enough reasonable doubt that they didn't convict him, which is insane to me.
Yeah, same jury. One of the other guys, the guy who hit me with the bottle, tried the same exact defense, saying the same exact thing, but the same jury found him guilty of the aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. And it's a weird situation. So the guy who initiated the robbery, he had his own jury. This was one trial happening at the same time with two juries, and anytime they talked about the people who participated in the later part of the attack, the one jury would be excused so that they don't hear about that. It was, the whole thing was a circus. Two of them pled guilty. Two of the five who faced charges ended up pleading guilty after spending a year in Cook County Jail or something like that. Mm-hmm. So and a year in Cook County Jail, that's Cook County Jail is worse than prison. So like, they did a little bit of time, and I knew they weren't going to get the more serious charges to stick to them. So whatever, they served like a year in Cook County Jail and got off on that. But yeah, the one guy was found not guilty, and then the two others were found guilty. So
my understanding is Cook County Jail is even worse now than it was in 1981 when the Blues Brothers were incarcerated there. Is that accurate in your opinion?
I think that probably is accurate. Okay. That's it's not a fun place to
I've genuinely heard terrible things about that place. Like you don't want to have to go there.
Yeah, you would rather, a lot of people would just rather plead guilty and hurry up and get their prison sentence so they could get out of there and go do, you know, time in a state prison. Yeah.
So let's talk about lessons real quick. I think I'm correct in saying that the standard, excuse me one second. Sorry about that. I smoked crack before we started here. So I think the thing we would say here at Act of Self-Protection is do not fight with a crook over your stuff. It's not worth your life. It's not worth your, you know, potentially going through what you went through. Listen, that's our suggestion. You know, we just tell people what we think, and we would have said, give the guy the phone and go on your way. However, I get the sense from the way you're telling the story that if you'd given them the phone, that might not have been it. Is that the sense you got, that they would have just kept going?
That's definitely it. I mean, there's the phone, and then there's what's in my pockets. There's my wallet. There's the bag that I'm carrying on my shoulder. And who's to say they're not going to try to seriously injure me or hurt me after that to make sure that they have time to get away and don't get caught, you know, at the next subway stop.
These guys do this every night. I wasn't kidding when I said the train driver, it might be his third robbery of the night. That's not an exaggeration. And that sort of casual violence, like the minute you don't do exactly what you're told, we're going to put a boot in your face. And that's going to end up with everyone else joining in and stomping the crap out of you and maybe killing you. So, and I think this is a unique case for that reason.
It definitely is. And although I learned this after the fact, the individual who stabbed me is a convicted murderer. He was convicted of murder in 1989. He was only sentenced to 25 years. He served just 25 years and he's out. But one of them's a convicted murderer. The individual who busted the bottle in my face had been arrested 32 times in the previous 36 months. And aside from those arrests within the last 3 years, being arrested monthly for 3 years straight, he's a convicted rapist and has also done time in IDOC for other things. So, I mean, these are serious offenders. And if anybody, is hinging their bets on, if I just give him what he wants, they're going to leave me alone. There's no gentleman's agreement between people like this.
Yeah. And I think
when they're trying to rob you,
any advice we give Act of Self-Protection to the general public is situational. And the reason I love doing this podcast is that no two stories are ever even remotely the same. They're all so different. We have every kind of story on the podcast to include, a win, loss, tie. I don't know what you call your story. A tie, I guess, a win. There's no telling what they would have done had you complied. And I think, if you're in the middle of being robbed, if it's happening to you, talking to you, if you're listening to this right now or watching this, if it's happening to you, only you can make the decision as to how you're going to proceed. And only you get the sense of, hey, what is this person capable of? If I comply, do I think that's going to be the end of it? Those are all things you have to consider. And I think you considered them as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. And there's also one more thing here in this situation. They didn't ask for my belongings. They initiated by physically trying to take it out of my hand and resulting to physical force right away. So the fact that they even skipped the, give us all your stuff or, we're going to kill you stage, I think says, that speaks to their inclination to use violence. Additionally, even after I might have let go of my phone or something.
Yeah, you should have looked up at him and been like, whoa, you guys even asked me for a cigarette or what time it was or anything. Like, this is how the new generation does crime? This is a civilized society. This isn't how we do things around here.
You just go jump right in.
Yeah, you're supposed to ask me for a light or something.
Foreplay? I mean, come on.
Try not let. Yeah, a little crime foreplay is the name of my new band, by the way. Criminal Foreplay is we're opening up for some. I can't even think of another band name. That one's so funny. All right, so Dan, I don't want to leave anything out here. I know there's some other stuff you definitely wanted to talk about that I might have missed. So, is there anything else you wanted to tell the good people before we part ways? I don't want to leave anything out.
I still carry the same type of knife, but around the neck now, especially if I'm out and about, because like I said, I definitely learned, obviously a knife or a pocket knife is not an ideal thing to defend yourself in any situation. I'm sure anybody would rather have a gun given the option, but the fact of the matter is I didn't have one, and there are a lot of situations where you may not be able to have one. The knife in the pocket, like I said, in that particular situation, I found it hard to get to, especially when just all of a sudden you're fighting two people. It doesn't sound too hard reaching into your pocket, but when it's four hands essentially against one, because I happen to have a phone in my hand at the time, I don't want to give my free hand up to reach into my pocket. So I carry a neck knife now. There's something else a little bit bigger in the pocket, but that's one of the rules. Another one is definitely, if you can, like you said, try to give your stuff up if you think that might save you. But you never know. And in this situation, I really didn't know. And
So that was another question I had. I'm sorry. It just left my tiny little pea brain. That one of the running jokes on the channel is that I can't, between the 10 seconds between when John says, "This video is from Peoria, Illinois," and you need to say that in a few minutes during the intro, and then me actually, him hitting the record button and starting off the intro and cutting to me, and I'm like, "Today's video comes to us from..." I don't remember, which is about half the time, so it drives John absolutely insane. But I did have a question for you. I can't think of it right now. I will give some advice out to criminals everywhere, because I know there has to be a crook who listens to this podcast. I know there's crooks who watch the YouTube channel. Hey, if you're in a group of people, and you know, one of your boys is assaulting someone and gets stabbed, and the person who did the stabbing is particularly stabby, like Dan is, and is ready to stab anyone else who comes along, consider your exit strategy. Maybe it's time to collect your idiot friend who got stabbed and get him out of there and get yourself out of there, because this person is not the victim that you were hoping for tonight. He's, as I said earlier, he and the denizens of Chicago are a bit prickly and don't particularly want to get robbed tonight, and we'll fight back. You know, I want to reiterate, and as Dan will tell you, he's experienced in defending himself and defending his life with a fixed blade and an edged weapon. They're not ideal, but it's better than nothing. Can you carry pepper spray in Chicago? Was there a particular law against that?
Yeah, you can carry pepper spray. You need a FOID card for tasers or electronic.
Okay, well, I tell you, I used to be a pepper spray instructor for the feds. Can't say enough about OC spray. It's fantastic. Now, in a subway car is a suboptimal environment to deploy OC spray for obvious reasons. You're going to contaminate the whole car. You might get some whatever. But the one advantage OC spray has, well, two advantages it has over a knife. One is it's a bit of a standoff weapon. So, you know, ideally, if things go right, you can keep someone away from you. They don't get in that close. And two, the odds of killing somebody with pepper spray are far, far less. And the reason that's a good thing, other than obviously our moral standpoint, is we don't want to have to kill anybody, is that down the road, you're not looking at manslaughter charges if you get an investigator or a district attorney who isn't particularly friendly, you know, to self-defenders. And they're out there, unfortunately. I don't know what the situation is like in Chicago with your prosecutor's office, but I know a lot of other cities have, I don't know what's going on, but they just have these crazy DAs who are letting people out left and right. And that same DA might decide that you're the problem. You know what I mean? And decide to come after you legally. So, if it's possible, it's practical and it's safe and you have it, I would go the OC route first. And as far as tasers go, I don't recommend tasers to private citizens. They're barely useful for cops. We like to say the taser is a sex panther of the self-defense world. 60% of the time it works every time. And I don't even know if it's that much. Now, my friend who is a sheriff's deputy will tell you, the taser works every time when it's deployed properly. Well, that's true, But trying to, if you're counting on one thing to protect you as a private citizen, I wouldn't make it a taser. All it takes is a slight miss or baggy clothing, yep. and you shot your shot, and now you're standing there with a already deployed taser in your hand, and you're about to get, you know, you're about to get pounded or shot or killed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Dan, I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm glad you're a viewer of the channel now. Welcome, welcome aboard Team ASP. And thanks for telling your story. This couldn't have been terribly easy. I've seen the pictures of the aftermath, and it is not pretty, folks. I know I've seen people beaten worse than that in my career, but not many. I can count them on one hand, people I've seen in that shape who weren't actually killed. Well done in defending yourself, and I appreciate you coming on, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Pleasure talking to you. Be safe and be vigilant, everybody.